feeling the muscles like strips of fire across his shoulders and chest. His fingers were sore, and he had two broken nails and a cluster of splinters that he would have to ask Mildred to remove from him later.
"You done good."
Dean flushed with pride. Other than his father, Jack Lorne was the closest thing to a hero that Dean knew.
"Thanks. You were talking about blasters not being good all the time."
"Sure. No good when you need quiet."
"Obvious. That when you use your knives?"
"Uh-huh."
Despite the heat of the afternoon, Jack was still wearing his usual jacket. He sat and leaned against the wall of the outbuilding, closing his eyes, looking totally relaxed. Dean stared at him, seeing the three scars that seamed across Jack's face. An ancient cicatrix sliced jaggedly across the left cheek, tugging the corner of the mouth up into something that might be mistaken for a smile. The other two scars, one along the jaw and the other close to the mouth, had been caused by a run-in with Cuddlies. Jack's eyes suddenly blinked open.
"Don't like being watched, kid."
"Don't like being called kid, Jack."
Dean waited a moment to make sure that Jack wasn't seriously angry with him.
"Show me your knives."
"Which ones?"
"Throwing knives."
"Nope."
"Please, Jack?"
"Point is, knives are hid. Show you, and one day you tell someone else, and I'm chilled."
Dean was shocked.
"I'd never betray you, Jack. I'd never betray anyone."
Jack shook his mane of pure white hair.
"Not so, Dean."
"It is so."
"Everyone has a breaking point."
"Not me. I'd rather die than betray anyone, Jack. You can't be serious, man."
"Nothing more serious, Dean."
"I'd kill myself if it came down to that."
"Sure you would. Me too. Not always possible. Seen good men and good women break down and cry. Give up daughters, sons, mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters. Couldn't take it."
"If you say so, Jack. Christy reckons you can sort of take yourself out of the pain where they can't touch you with it. You heard her say that?"
"Yeah. Believe her. Don't know you could do it. Not when Triple Evil comes calling."
While the sun shone down and the cooling breeze blew across the New Mexico wilderness, Jack Lorne told the boy about a time of betrayal. It had been when Jack was only 8 years old, and a member of his father's gang, fighting against the dreadful oppression of Baron Tormont in the swamps of Louisiana. It had been high summer, and one of the Baron's sec patrols had caught a senior lieutenant of the gang, a man in his middle 30s, with intimate knowledge of all the secret routes through the treacherous bayou country, as well as knowledge of numbers, camps, weapons, and plans.
"Name was Al Brooks. Lost two fingers to a gator, and two more to a goddess slut in Tallahassee. Tough son of a bitch. Your son, Ike, good friend of mine."
Tormont had Brooks held prisoner in a cell on a small island, close to his base. The man was naked and chained hand, foot, and neck. He had no way of moving at all. Jack's father had sent him in at night, the pale-skinned child smeared with stinking mud and gator shit. He slid through the dark waters like a moccasin snake, waiting for an hour, as still as a log, watching for his moment. He scampered to the hut and used his preternatural agility to worm his way onto the roof. Then he burrowed patiently through the overlapped leaves until he was perched on a supporting beam, able to see and hear everything without being seen or heard.
"He got it all the time. They got Armalites. Like they say, traitor carries. Couldn't do anything to help out."
All the ghostly little boy could do was sit and observe while Brooks was tortured by Tormont's henchmen. The Baron himself had told his prisoner that he would only bother to come and see him when he'd been softened up, ready to spill his guts and betray the others.
"They took turns. Torture's fucking tyrant to do. Hour, and you need rest from it."
The best torture was subtle. Anyone could break arms or knock out teeth, but that was crude and clumsy, and often resulted in the accidental and premature killing of your victim.
"Break the spirit, and you break the body. A bit at a time. Repeat it again and again. So he knows won't ever stop. Until he talks."
Al Brooks had reached the point. Each of his remaining fingers and toes had been slowly and delicately broken. Each knuckle had been crushed. Most of the major joints had been dislocated, including elbows, shoulders, knees, and hips. The litany of horror had gone on and on.
"And had women work on his cock and balls with..."
I get the picture. Yeah, I see.
I was ready to talk to Baron Tormont.
So, what did you do?
We should be finishing the dough.
Come on, Jack, please.
Waited until the guard went out to take a leak. Dropped down. Al saw me. Think he recognized me. Tried to speak.
What did he say?
Couldn't tell. Never listened. I cut his throat quick and hard. Guard heard a death rattle. Came back. Saw little 8-year-old kid. Slowed his reactions. So I cut his throat, too.
Woo! Hot pipe! That showed the bastards!
Jack was on his feet with a startling speed. His hand lifted as though he were about to slap Dean. The boy shrank, his right hand going for the turquoise hilt of his knife. But Jack let his arm drop down.
Dean, you got good sense for young boy. But you gotta learn the lesson. The chilling and torture ain't fun.
The boy stood, looking around, eager to change the subject and ease his own embarrassment.
Can't you just show me your throwing knives, Jack, please?
Right.
Jack looked, pointing to a circular blemish on the feather-edged timber wall of the barn. It was about the size of a man's palm, roughly 30 feet from where Jack was standing.
See that, Dean?
Sure.
Watch it.
Dean kept one eye on the slightly built teenager, seeing how he stood in a half-crouch, looking both tense and relaxed at the same time. Both hands dangled loose at his sides, his fingers flexing, as if he were practicing to play a complex piano concerto.
You give it away, Dean.
Ready and go! Holy shit!
6 short knives quivered in the wood, every one within that tiny area.
I would have bet you couldn't get them all in there, Jack!
Jack walked toward the barn to retrieve his weapons.
Then you would have lost, huh?
Abe leaned forward to throw another couple of branches onto the fire.
You think we're far enough from that howling posse?
JB had field-stripped his scattergun and was carefully wiping it dry and clean with a cotton rag.
Must have covered 8 or 9 miles since we lost them. We're way outside the ville now.
Ryan nodded. He'd taken off most of his wet clothing, hanging them on an elaborate framework of sticks by the fire, while he kept himself warm in the afternoon sunshine, bustling around with a blanket across his shoulders, replacing the cut harness.
Agreed.
Trader was stirring some herbs that he'd gathered into a thick, greenish ooze in a pot on the hot ashes at the edge of the flames. He was making himself a poultice that he swore Silver Lightfeet, a Native American shaman, had shown him how to prepare, to take away any risk of infection from the long, shallow knife wound across his ribs.
Reckon we shouldn't stay camped here for the night. If the sickheads really want us, they could be here in less than 3 hours.
They've had enough.
Yeah, we thought that about the posse that nearly chilled me. They kept coming after us and then kept on coming some more.
That's true, Abe. And Trader, you were the one who taught me never to underestimate how triple stoop a vengeance gang can be.
I did, didn't I, Ryan? Damn right I did. Well, we better get a move on, hadn't we?
Since there was no sign that the mob from Seattle had any form of transport, there was no great hurry. They allowed the team to draw the hearse on at a steady pace, with the pack horses tied behind. The friends took turns to drive the rig into the surrounding hills, with Trader stretched out at ease in the back, recovering from his injuries. The weather had turned much milder, with a gentle breeze from the southeast caressing their faces. They stopped only once before evening for everyone to relieve himself, JB stopping the hearse at the crest of a steepish hill to give the team a break. Trader's wounds had stiffened during the ride, and he had to be helped down.
Ah, fuck!
He stumbled and nearly fell, hanging on to Abe's arm.
Son of a bitch! I'll be hung, quartered, and dried for the crows. There's times I wish I'd died before I got to be old.
Trader steadied himself against the smooth trunk of an elegant silver birch while he urinated. There were the roofless remains of a brick shelter near where they'd stopped, and Ryan wandered over to take a look, finding faded graffiti on one wall that had been protected from the harsh prevailing winds. 2 different hands had written it. The first in crimson had been sprayed on. "We shall drive a tunnel of hope through the mountain of despair," was followed by the initials MLK. Underneath, in white, less elegantly daubed, was "The mountain of despair fucking fell in on our tunnel." Abe was lying on his back by the fire, his arms crossed under his head,